pollution, you know, and that's so bad. I feel so sad for the population, you know, and as and if there would be more liberty, more freedom, and more education, so to say, what will happen, and maybe this will happen really in the next couple of years, that all those ones who are very well educated, they will be brain drained, they will move out. I mean, that's what we see in many other parts of the world. Maybe this is also a chance or opportunity, because they may come back later on, highly trained, educated, and all those kind of things, but medium term, the next couple of years, besides all this kind of military stuff that may happen, it's bad. It's a bad situation. You know, I'm not a bit optimistic. And by the way, the rest of the world, when all the things are coming along without any kind of military conflict, in 2 years nobody talks about Ukraine or Crimea any longer. Man, it's a, you know, there's also kind of experience with all the other regions in this part of the world. So you know, it's bad, but that's seems to me very realistic.
Well, I mean, we could talk of possible scenarios, right? I mean, the one we talked about was if Ukraine, I think we all agree that Crimea, the Russians are not going to hand it over, right? So we're talking basically of will Ukraine break up or not?
Singer Hinu Dika on the hard arg dick is hard arg. God's arcas Gusu dick all arg. Dukes a planet hard arg.
In Heim Heide, Northern Heide, we're called the old ones. I'm of the eagle part of the population. My crest is an eagle with two heads. And Heidelberg's to a legion. My hometown is called Heidelberg. And anyway, I haven't been around for a while. I've been busy. I'm working with Backpass as what they call a client support elder. I told them, well, if they put name on a door, just put old guy. So anyway, that's what I've been doing. And finally getting my schedule worked around to where I can take the time to come here to be with you. And from time to time, I would like to just give you a few words in Haida. So you can play with. There's a seaweed that we pick, oh, I guess it's next month, April, May, and it's black. It grows on rocks down here, too. I've seen it down there by Wreck Beach on rocks, but it lasts for only about a month. We call it s'hiu, s'hiu, and s'hiwai halgum. But it's pronounced like the hissing of a snake, and then a stop and force the air out was hew, hew. And then we put A-A-Y on the end becomes s-hew-I, s-hew-I, s-hew-I. That means the seaweed, halgun, halgun, means that the seaweed is black. Or we can say Yalais Helgen. Yalais Helgen. The raven is black. So anyway, that's just two little phrases if you ever hear them.
Can I try?
Yeah, okay, here we go.
All right.
So first you make a hissing noise like a leaky steam pipe. Like that. And then hue, H-E-W.
Hue.
No, two separate sounds. Hue.
Hue.
Hue. And then you emphasize it by saying hue.
Hue.
Hue. Like you got a cat hairballing. Hue. Can you make that sound?
Hue.
Hue.
Hue. Two separate sounds.
Hue.
Hue.
Almost like catch you.
Hue. And then Helgen. Helgen.
Helgen.
Helgen. See, the HL sound is like if you take the word antler, it has a TL sound, antler. Now, if you change the T to an H, it becomes antler.
Antler.
So you make that hl sound.
Sure.
Helgen.
Helgen.
Helgen, yes.
Helgen.
There you go. Ah. Or raven, we have different words for raven. In the north, we borrowed the one from the Tlingit people. They say yeet, and we call it yas.
Yas.
But the southern Haidas, we use the word huye.
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 Huye. There's that song that goes
huye, huye. Huye, huye. Yeah, that's those.
Huye, huye.
That's sort of like the hokey pokey.
Oh, is it? We adapted.
Well, one of the ceremonies we got came from a people from a place called Mexica.
Uh huh.
You ever hear of Mexica?
Not really.
That's what they call Mexico.
Oh.
But the people, the original people there were called Mexica.
Mexica.
Mexica. Mexica, yeah. And then later they start calling some of the people from Mexico, they're called Chicana.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that's where that sound comes from, Chicana.
Chicana.
Chicana, you know, it's Mexico.
And probably, yeah, that would turn into Mexico.
Yeah.
Or Mexico.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's where that came from. And my mother was from Oklahoma. She was Cherokee. And when the depression of the 1930s really hit that part of the world, it was called the Dust Bowl because there was no rain, there was drought, and the wind was blowing the soil away. So my grandfather moved the family to California. He got a job working in a fruit packing plant in California near Palm Springs, and so moved the whole family there. But because they were Indians, they couldn't live with the white people. They had to live with the Mexicans. And my mother said she never had so much fun in all her life. There was, I think she called it a boily or bailey, something like that. These fiestas that they would have. They had a party for everything, you know, everybody singing, eating.
And delicious food.
Delicious
What I mean. They had a feast for everything. And the other people, you know, the white people sitting in their little houses, you know, counting their pennies. And everybody trying to steal from each other and not really helping each other, but there they had a great time.
Uh-huh.
And when they arrived in California, there was a very long line of cars waiting to cross the border because they had to pay a head tax. They had to pay so much money to enter California or have a certain amount of money. But my grandfather was able to get right across the border because he had a job already before. So he went to California first, and he got a job, and then he went back, got the family.
Uh-huh.
So they grew up there. And then my mother went to an Indian residential school called Sherman Institute in Riverside, California, and that's where she met my father. And they eloped and went to Yuma, Arizona, February 1941, and went to a justice of peace to get married.
Uh-huh.
They had to fill out a marriage license, and my dad never learned to think in English. You know, his English was very bad, but when you put down your race, you were either Oriental, Negroid, Caucasian, Other. So my dad printed Indian where it says Other, and my mother just checked Caucasian. And the Justice of Peace looked at that, and he said, I can't marry you. It's against the law for white people to marry a person of color. And my mother started to cry. So my dad grabbed that paper and he ripped it up and told her, fill out another one. So she filled out another one, printed on her Indian.
Oh.
But it was against the law for him to get married in 1941.
And, that's an amazing story.
So when we talk about, you know, about this thing about human rights, mm-hmm. human rights and all that, when I was in law school, we talked about some of those rights. And when you take a look at what's been happening politically, it's happening all through this whole Western Hemisphere, and I think it's beginning to invade the rest of the world too, is where money is taking control of. Used to be governments were instituted to protect the rights of persons, of humans, and also to provide for the general welfare. Because now everybody's paying into a government, they spread the costs and they spread the money out over a very large population. But what's happened is you take, like in the United States, you have all these millionaires and billionaires that are able to contribute money to these big Republican candidates who have a lot of money and they don't want people to get anything. They're attacking women's rights. And here in Canada, I think Harper really has hit his stride. He appointed a new Minister of Finance who's an investment banker. And then you take a look at here in B.C., it's the same thing with Christie. Clark, is that her name?
Yeah.
They're trying to turn the government into a corporation. You cannot use investment bankers when you are dealing with a nonprofit organization. And so that's what they're doing, is they're trying to turn it into a profit organization when it isn't. So our rights can never really be protected. Here in British Columbia, they pretty well took out all the protections for human rights. You try to go get a lawyer to file a human rights claim, and you don't really have much to work with. You can fight the courts, you can fight all those things, but I don't know where it begins. I know I'm not the one to go out and save everybody, because I'm but one voice. What I think has to happen is we have to return to the values that were a normal part of our lives before the Europeans brought us, the concept of unconditional surrender. We had fights, but we never had unconditional surrender. They brought us this whole concept of real estate so that the land now has monetary value. But the biggest thing they've done to us is they brought with them what we call a command-structured language and command-structured society. So there always has to be something at the top of the pyramid. Now, Haida, like all other indigenous languages, is not a command-structured language. In fact, our term for chief, Nang Itlaqdas, literally means a big boss who can't give orders. So a chief can't order anybody to do anything. The head of the village couldn't punish anybody for anything, couldn't chastise anybody. The whole system was based on trust and cooperation. And also, we have a term that's, it's really hard to translate, but it's pronounced Satchugalayakutang, and that loosely translates to social control by obligation and negotiation. But Lana Yakutang, Lana is a town, Yakutang, or a community, and Yakutang is a deep sense of respect. And so when we talk about social control by obligation, what that translated to was the younger always have to defer to the older. But then the other part of the respect part of it, of the negotiation part, that there were times when that was not appropriate to have the young one keep quiet while the older one spoke. And so it was always a part of, let's listen to the younger ones, they might have something to tell us. And that means even the small children. So without money, there was no point to stealing anything. Because what are you going to do with it? You can only eat so much food and wear so many clothes, and you can't sell them because you don't, you know, there's no money. Also, you didn't have murder because people kill each other to get something that belongs to somebody else. And rape, if that happened, it was probably in some fight somewhere rather than within your own society. It didn't happen because the brothers would kill you. If you beat up your wife, she'd tell her brothers to come talk to you. You do it again, they hurt you. You do it again, you might not return to the surface of the ocean. So this was the way in which society protected all of its own. But today, with the state and with corporations, all you have to do is follow the money and you'll find the rights. The golden rule. Who has the gold rules?
So you've been listening to Woody Morrison, co-hosting with myself and Peter Rodriguez today on Language to Language. It's 2:15 CITR time. And now, Peter, would you care to put what Woody said in a nutshell for the listeners, please?
Well, you know, he was talking for like 15 minutes. I will try to do
my
best.
All right, do your best.
Hola, ¿qué tal? Buenas tardes. Estamos en Language to Language en CITR. La radio de UBC desde Vancouver, Canadá. Bueno, esta tarde tenemos aquí como co-host a Woody Morrison, quien nos está dando sus puntos de vista, obviamente, sobre las situaciones políticas generales en el mundo, los grandes poderes, las grandes transnacionales y un poco desde su visión, su experiencia de qué está pasando con nuestra sociedad, y nuestra sociedad me refiero en Occidente, en Oriente, acá en Canadá, pero también en Latinoamérica. Por eso, un poco más adelante en el programa, vamos a estar conversando también sobre la situación de Venezuela y de los estudiantes en Venezuela. A propósito, este día sábado hay una manifestación a las 3 de la tarde en el Robson Square, de la Galería de Arte de Vancouver, pero es una manifestación a favor de los estudiantes. Ya estaremos conversando un poco más del tema, pero por ahora seguimos con Woody Morrison y con Gunnarji, que nos va a seguir compartiendo música y la información que tenemos para el día de hoy. Gunnarji, we're ready.
Yes, we are ready. So it's been an interesting show. We've been learning a little bit of Haida language, some phrases, mm-hmm. And we've been talking about Canada as a corporation. Woody says we are becoming a corporation, but there are a lot of First Nations Indigenous leaders, especially hereditary chiefs, people like Vern Bolton who and Eric Gray, who already feel like Canada is a corporate. Canada, right? Canada. So what are your thoughts on some of the things that Woody shared with you today, Peter?
Well, you know, it's a lot of things happening around the world, you know, but at the end, the biggest problem is pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody wants the power. When they got the power, they want more power. Uh-huh. And, you know, the people who is probably fighting right now because of that, in 5 years from now, they will have the power and they will do the same. So it's probably like it's everything's going on circle, right?
Right.
So it's a very tough moment. I don't know if something is going to change, but you know there are things happening in Ukraine, and I have to be honest, I found more information here in Canada about Ukraine than what happened with the rest of the world. Right, but it's a lot of things happening around the world also, so that's why we're going to talk a little bit more the Venezuelan students protest. That can you imagine that start February the 5th and the big part starting February the 12th and we are March the 27th and it's still going, so it's a lot of people dying down there.
Yeah, in Venezuela though you really have a very big problem with so many people being killed all the time and murdered. So you ask, you know, what can change? What might change? And there are a group of individuals. It's not an organization, but people who are raised, chosen at birth to know the histories, to what we call the timekeepers. And I thought of it always as a tide watcher. And we were told to remember the future, because whatever happened in the past is going to happen again. And so all this stuff with the weather, all those changes, this was already told to us, this has happened before. So when we start looking at it, are we going to continue to just keep, take like an ocean wave, keep slamming against a rock? Eventually it'll wear the rock down, but it doesn't really make much of a change for a very, very long time. So we can either do that, or we can just walk away from it and say, okay, we're going to start changing ourselves. We're going to start recreating the sense of community, the sense of sharing, of trusting each other. Because in this world of empire building, we're taught not to trust. I don't trust you. I don't trust my brother. I don't trust my sisters. We're taught not to. Yeah. And I'm not going to share with you because you'll take everything I got. I'll give you a little bit, you take the rest. And so we have to start at some point learning to trust again. We don't wait for people to trust us or for you to prove that I can trust you. I say, okay, I'm going to trust you right from the very beginning. And if you prove otherwise, then that's how it's going to be. But we don't start with you proving that you can be trusted at the beginning.
But, you know, we can start with really small things. You know, like I want to say today that Gunarji trusted me. Mm-hmm. Just when we talk, like we cross two words and she invited me to be part of the show, you know. So I think the big things will change with the small things.
Well,
if
I think
a small thing
also,
happens, you know.
Yeah.
If you trust in somebody, in, you know, like, just small, very small things.
Well, first of all, you have to take the first step,
definitely,
right?
Definitely.
But you were open to it, and I was open to it. And I think that is what is missing. And then we also have this idea of the language barrier between us.
Mm-hmm.
You know your language, I don't know your language, and I don't know my own language.
Yeah.
So then there becomes this tension, like for me, anyway, as an English speaker that has lost her language. And so I think that by doing this show, we're able to break down those walls of communication that have been getting in our way of getting to know each other, talking with one another, and trying to understand each other.
Yeah, I agree. You know, just a small thing to some people, it may be a big thing, but, you know, it's just the way we do things. The other thing that we have to look at is this whole concept of race. That's what I call an artificial construct. It only applies in certain social situations where someone is trying to show they're superior to someone else. We all come from the same genetic mold. We all come from the same place. We're all humans. We have different views on the world. We have different cultural practices and this sort of thing. And I know, like, for example, at home, the English people took one man's brain so they could measure it and all that, so they could show different ways in which they were superior to native people. And so they've been doing stuff like this for a long time. And to me, when somebody has to prove they're superior, it's because they feel inferior.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably what's scaring many of them is that over 97% of the people in the world are people of color.
That's right.
And less than 3% are what you would call white people. And the Caucasians are only come from the Caucasus Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And the Aryans, they actually come from Persia. They're not a white race.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start looking at all these phony labels.
Yeah. And the thing is that when people talk about colors,
yeah,
you know, talking about the human race, the people,
yeah,
the thing is white, black, yellow, all of them are colors.
Yeah.
You know, so if somebody asks me, what color are you? You know, it's, you're white, I'm whatever.
I
know?
Saw something
on Facebook.
But
everybody has a color, you know.
I saw something on Facebook that said, how dare you call me colored? Because when you were born, you were pink. You know, when you get sick, you get green. And when you're dying, you turn purple. And you're calling me colored?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a fine line. Humor is a really great way to get around issues of race.
Definitely.
It's been used like
definitely
a lot.
It puts so many obstacles to people being able to talk to each other. When someone, see, we were told that My stature is determined by how tall I am, not how small I make someone else look.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have to make someone look small, it's because I feel smaller than them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really demonstrating my own insecurities when I do that.
Mm-hmm. They say the loudest person in the room is the most insecure.
Well, it's because cannot hear also.
Yeah, they can't hear. They're too busy talking.
Well, I can't hear and I'm busy talking.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, when... I started reading about South America as much as I could, and I forget which country once was the emperor, whatever you call him, was an Irishman.
An Irishman?
Yeah, he was an Irishman. His name was O'Toole, I think it was. And this was sometime in the 1800s. He was a pirate or some kind, and then he came to prominence.
Down there, we have too many histories about pirates, you know, like from all over the world.
Well, a lot of them do. They want to trace their descendancy back to the conquistadors.
Yeah.
So either you're Indian or you're Spanish.
Last week we were talking about how the Spanish and still the our goal, right? But we turned that into an image, you know.
Uh-huh.
When we said that, we are talking about that they steal everything. You know, our language, our traditions, everything.
Our children.
Yep.
Yeah, because last week we had the opportunity to interview Dallas Yellowsky. No, uh-huh.
Yellowfly.
And Dallas is a storyteller like uh-huh. yourself, and he shares a story about Zuniqua.
Uh-huh.
And so I asked Peter, can you find a story from your people that is similar to our Zuniqua? Mm-hmm. And this is what he came up with.
I think I heard some of that. I was mm-hmm. listening on radio.
Mm-hmm.
And... when we I work with an art mentorship program
mm-hmm.
as a storyteller, and each week we have a lesson, and the one last night had to do with wisdom.
Oh, yeah.
So I told him, you know, wisdom is used for many things. For me, it used to be wisdom was what I got out of a bottle, you know, a little whiskey here or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, drink some wisdom, and pretty soon I'm bulletproof, I'm invincible, I'm handsome, I'm smart, and all this. But I told him a story about an old man up in Alaska, his Tlingit man. His grandson would come and visit him every day,
mm-hmm.
and he had a catalog. And this boy would always look through the catalog, and when he got to a certain page, he'd stay and just staring at that one page. One day, the grandfather decided to find out what it was. So he watched when the boy closed the catalog, and he went over, opened it, and found that page. And it was a toy. And he thought, well, he likes this thing so much, I think I'll send for it.
Mm-hmm.
So he filled out an order blank, sent away for it. And one day this large parcel arrived. He opened it. And he thought, oh, my God, there's 1,000 pieces in there. How do you put it together?
Mm-hmm.
And he was really worried about it. And then he thought, well, I have a neighbor who's an engineer. I'll go ask him. So he went next door, asked the white guy over there that was the engineer if he'd help him. So he came over and he brought out the big box and he asked, where's the instructions? So the old man gave him the instructions and he read them very carefully over 3-4 times and then carefully constructed this toy. And so when the grandson came by and his grandfather put it on, this boy was just overjoyed at this new toy. But like all other boys, he took it apart. And when he left, the grandfather thought, now what am I going to do, you know? I don't want to shame myself, go ask that man to come over here again. And it really bothered him. And it just, he couldn't stop thinking about it. Then there's a knock on the door, and he just hollered, who, you know? And it's his friend came in. And he was sitting there just staring at the wall. Finally, his friend says, where are you? Oh, I'm sorry, he said. So he told him about that toy. And he said, I don't know how to put it back together. And he said, I don't want to go and shame myself and ask that person to come over here and fix it again. He said, well, let me look at it. So he brought it out, the big box, and they handed him the instructions. He said, oh, I don't need that thing. And he was studying the picture on the box. A few minutes, he had it put together.
Oh.
And he said, gee, how'd you do that? He said, that other fellow had to read that long time before he even started. He said, I guess if you can't read, you have to learn how to think.
Yeah, that's true,
yeah. So then I told him about this guy in a mental institution up on the second floor, and he'd sit by the window every day watching the cars go by. One day a car stopped. The driver got out and looked. He had a flat tire. So he went and he got his spare tire and a jack and stuff, and he went over and he loosened the lug nuts and then he jacked it up. And when he took the hubcap off, he laid it behind him, and he took the lug nuts off the wheel and he put them in that hubcap. And just as he pulled that flat tire off, a car went by and hit that hubcap, and it flipped it, and those lug nuts, you know, for bolting the wheel back on, went flying across the road. And it was kind of like a bog, you know, just wet and spongy. So this guy, the guy in the mental institution, sat there and watched him, just feeling around there, trying to find those lug nuts. Finally, he gave up. He was sitting on the side of the road. So he called him. He says, "Hey." Guy looked up and says, "Hey, yourself." He says, I can tell you how to fix that." "Well, how am I going to fix it?" He says, "You take one lug nut off each of the other three wheels and you put it on that one. It'll hold it till you get where you're going." I thought, hey, that might work. So he put it on like that. He thought, by God, it's going to work. And he turned around and he says, "Could I ask you something?" And the mental patient said, "Yeah, what?" He said, "If you could figure this out, what are you doing in there?" He laughed. He said, "I'm crazy, not stupid." So we never discount somebody's words simply by the way they act or behave.
No,
you never know what you're going to learn if you listen.
Yeah, that's right.
And the other thing is that you were mentioned early that you know that we have to learn from even from the kids, you know,
oh, yeah.
The young people. Definitely. And definitely that's something that we need to learn from the kids. It's to trust,
uh-huh.
You know. They trust in other kids. They trust in their teachers. They trust, I mean, in everybody,
yeah.
You know. So that's something that we have to learn about the young people, you know, and kids especially. And they are very, very innocent,
mm-hmm.
And they just give you everything. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they share with you their toys. They share with you mm-hmm. their food, you know.
Yeah.
And that's something that we need to learn from them.
Yeah.
That's right. And here we are sharing language with Peter Rodriguez and Woody Morrison. We've been talking about many things, everything from Canada as a corporation to Venezuela and to, we've learned some language today, a little bit of language.
A little bit.
And some wisdom.
Some wisdom, how to listen, why it's so important to listen, and that we can learn from kids.
Definitely.
One of the things I also do is I co-facilitate a program called Strengthening Fathers. And in one of the sessions I told the guys, you know, sometimes a man gets very upset because his wife is making more money than him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really being foolish because, you know, that's more money for the house.
Yeah.
Or if his wife has a job and he doesn't, he gets upset because she doesn't get home and fix his dinner. Well, that's not very bright either. Because a man has a responsibility to teach what he knows. If he has children, instead of sitting around feeling bad for himself and stewing about things, tell the kids, "Come on, I want to show you something. I'm going to show you some. Take them out. Talk about a tree, about a rock. Take them down a beach. If you don't know, you have a responsibility to learn it."
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to happen is the kids are going to see that you have the magic. The kids are going to be able to go to sleep at night knowing Dad is here.
Yeah.
Dad's going to look out for us. Dad's mm-hmm. going to take care of us.
Mm-hmm.
At first, the wife's going to say, "What the hell is he up to now?"
Uh-huh.
But then she's going to begin to realize that she's getting a kind of support she never had before. And so now this trust begins to work both ways. The kids begin to trust their father's going to be there,
mm-hmm.
trust that their father's going to give them the magic. And the wife mm-hmm. trusts him now. So it begins to build this way. And we get a group of men together, and they start talking about being fathers. What does it mean to be a father? What do I have to teach my children? What do I have to learn from what I'm supposed to be teaching? So to me, that's what I do, and that's...
Yeah.
When is that program, Woody?
It's on Tuesday nights from 5:30 until 8, and our last session is this coming Tuesday. And then we'll have about a 2-week break, and then we start mm-hmm. another one over there at the Vancouver Aboriginal Child and Family Services Society on 745 Clark Street. So there's no requirement for being having a referral.
Uh-huh.
Just show
just
up
show
or
up.
Call Patricia.
What
and
a
also,
great place to meet men.
and it's not restricted to by race.
Oh, good.
That if you're a father and you want to learn about being a father, you come on, sit down. We always start with a meal
mm-hmm.
because then people can relax and talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, the guys don't want to talk.
Yeah.
And then gradually they begin
strong
to realize, you know, that it doesn't mean you're weak because we're not talking about being warriors, all this tough stuff, mm-hmm. you know. No, it's... You gotta face things yourself. You don't wait for somebody to do things for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got a responsibility. You gotta protect your children. And then your woman, you gotta take the bullet for her if you have to.
Yeah.
That's your responsibility. That's the way it's always been. I don't
mm-hmm.
care what society has changed and what economics has changed. You are still that part of creation that says, I have to protect the life giver.
Mm-hmm.
I am the initiator, she's the procreator.
Mm.
You know, I'm the one that brings the seed, but I have to protect her at all costs. And when people can start doing that, then we can stop having to talk about abuse
mm-hmm.
and all the terrible things that
violence
are happening
violence.
To people.
Mm-hmm.
As if we start having some respect for ourselves. And, you know, I think a lot of it is we've been taught to hate women. The English common law and a lot of the stuff from Europe reduced women to chattel as nothing more than possessions, children also. And so that attitude is permeated through all of our First Nations because of the residential school. This was actually beaten into the kids so that they would know that no matter how weak or stupid a man is, he's still superior to a woman.
Well, they also kept the women and the children, I mean the children, brothers and sisters, separated in
mm-hmm.
these homes. So when we finally did get together, you know, we didn't know how to get along, how to be together, how to be there for each other, because
mm-hmm.
we'd never grew up with that. We just were separated.
You didn't share.
No.
Didn't share.
Anything.
Didn't hug, didn't kiss.
Well, even today, you know, talking about this whole corporate movement, we have people who have programs prepare children to go to kindergarten. That is not a place to start training them for future employment. This is where they're supposed to learn socialization, how to get along with each other, how to share, get to
yeah.
know each other.
Yeah.
But instead, they're turning them into that. They want to get rid of the public school so that you have to pay to go to an academy, and now you won't be able to afford to go it, so now you're going to be the peons, you're going to be the serfs. So they're trying to bring back feudalism. But anyway, I got to go. I've got a client I've got to meet with at 3:30, and so my car can't drive too fast today.
Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure having you back on the show, Woody.
Well,
I hope
I'm
that
just
we can
tickled to be back, and I'm so pleased
yeah.
to meet you, Peter, and
yes.
I hope I'm looking
nice
to see you
too.
Next week.
Well, it's my
yeah.
pleasure.
Yeah. Okay, adios.
Okay. All right. We'll play some music and we'll be right back with a translation by Peter Rodriguez. And we thank you for joining us here on 101.9. There you go. He said it.
You know, I think.
What?
All right. Thank you for joining us on Language to Language. We had the pleasure of having Woody Morrison in the house with us. And as we said, it's been a pleasure. So we started you off with SoCam, and Today is a Good Day, music by the Stat Emek. They're Lilawat, and the songs we heard were songs such as Welcome and The Grandmother's Song, and now the Song of Encouragement. Peter.
Okay, hemos estado el día de hoy conversando con Woody Morrison y hablando de muchos temas que están latentes, como la situación de Ucrania o Venezuela, y a su vez también nos estuvo bastante al inicio, no sé si ustedes lo notaron, pero yo no podía pronunciar muchas de las palabras que nos estaba enseñando en lenguas nativas. Bueno, ahora vamos a continuar.
Yes, and now for news on, in Venezuela, a popular uprising of class warfare. Faces of mothers and children were killed in criminal violence, peer out from the walls. And Caracas. Yes, and Venezuela has one of the highest murder rates in the world, even more than British Columbia or Canada. United Nations, March 27th, 2014, this is much known, at least 33 people are dead and 461 have been wounded. The rest, questions of who, why, and what next for Venezuela.
Yeah. El tema está justamente con la situación de los estudiantes en Venezuela. Ahora hablando de los estudiantes, pero todo empieza durante todos estos 15 años del último gobierno que han tenido, donde los niveles de criminalidad han crecido de forma incontrolable. Solo para tener una idea, en 1998 habían 4.500 muertes por año. Y para el 2013 la cifra llegó a 24.763 muertes, es decir, los niveles de criminalidad se dispararon, se salieron de control.
Okay, earlier this month, a group of United Nations independent experts asked the government of Nicolas Maduro to clarify allegations of arbitrary arrests, intimidation of journalists, and the abuse of dissidents in what experts say is the country's worst political turmoil in over 10 years.
En los primeros días del año, un grupo de personas de las Naciones Unidas consultaron al presidente de Venezuela, Nicolás Maduro, a través de los fuentes posibles, qué era lo que estaba pasando en Venezuela y qué cuánta verdad había de la represión contra civiles, de la persecución a los medios de comunicación y de todos los abusos que se decía que se estaban cometiendo. El informe finalmente reveló que la situación en Venezuela era inmanejable y crítica.
Beginning in early February, as sporadic student demonstrations, protests are now a daily occurrence, drawing anywhere from 500 to 5,000 people who say they have taken it to the streets against perennial food shortages, soaring inflation, and a steep rise in crime, including 21,000 homicides in 2012 alone, according to the Venezuelan Violence Observatory, representing one of the highest murder rates in the world.
A principios del mes de febrero, se empezaron a sentir algunas protestas debido a los temas de criminalidad, escasez de alimentos y como ya lo habíamos mencionado, también sobre los altos índices de criminalidad.
And although initially peaceful, the protest recently turned deadly, with civilians firing bullets from behind their barricades and the National Guard dispatching units decked out in full riot gear to meet them.
A inicios de febrero entonces empezaron las protestas de forma pacífica, pero se fueron tornando violentas hasta que la Guardia Nacional empezó a salir a las calles y a reprimir a los manifestantes.
Yes, and for several weeks, the media has portrayed the situation as democratic struggle for human rights, including the rights to freedom of speech and political assembly.
Durante varias semanas, la prensa mundial ha estado siguiendo el tema y sobre todo pidiendo que se permitan las libertades, como principalmente la libertad de expresión y que se detenga la represión.
And the United Human Rights Council in Geneva, Human Rights Watch, also known as HRW, urged Maduro's government to uphold its international legal obligations to respect human rights and specifically to end abuses against demonstrators.
Finalmente, la Comisión Interamericana de Derechos Humanos ha pedido que el gobierno de Nicolás Maduro cese con las represiones violentas y que se respeten los derechos humanos de los ciudadanos.
And we'll just end this segment by saying that James Petras is quoted as saying, "These are not random acts. This is a deliberate campaign to cut social links between the government and its mass base by blocking the delivery of social services."
Esta no es una campaña de represión o algo similar, sino que se está tratando de violentar los derechos de civiles de los ciudadanos.
And now we have a call in from Donald Warren. Hello, Donald.
Hi, how are you doing? How's Vancouver?
It's fine, thank you. You were in Edmonton at the finale, Truth and Reconciliation. It's their seventh region that they have visited. Tell us what's happening there. Hello?
Hello, yes, I'm here. I'm with my guest that is a residential school survivor, and I have the honor to introduce you to Val Stamp. How are you today, Val?
I'm okay.
Okay.
Overwhelming.
A bit overwhelming. So,
Donald, excuse me, Donald. Sullivan. Donald.
Here we are.
Okay.
Hi, Gnadio.
Hi there, Valerie. How are you doing today, sweetie?
Oh, it's so overwhelming and so many peoples here.
How many
people? First Nations. It's very emotional.
Yes, it is an emotional experience, but also a healing experience,
yes,
is it not?
Yes, exactly.
So they're having a big celebration now because this is the finale of Truth and Reconciliation and the final destination for the commission to visit. What is the general feeling? Is it a celebration, or is it all doom and gloom at the end of the road there?
For a lot, I believe it's a celebration, and for some, for me, like, I feel a little emotional, you know, because personally, I'm not just a survivor. My grandfather was, and I went looking for his name, and I got all emotional looking for his name in Red Deer, Alberta.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of information that, you know, people want to look for their relatives, stuff like that.
I see. Okay. And is there a lot of talk about the healing journey at this point, ma'am?
Different, yeah. There's different conference rooms for all sorts of different healing areas.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about your story? Are you a survivor yourself or an intergenerational survivor?
Well, both.
Both.
My parents were both. My grandfather was. Yeah, and I was. I wasn't in there for 1 year, and that was enough for me.
Yeah, well, that was enough for me, too. I was only there for 1 year as well.
Mm-hmm.
Can I please talk to Donald again?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And hi to Eric Stampo there in Vancouver.
Right on. Hi, Eric.
Hi to Eric Stamp. Now, that's wonderful. Relative back west, and here we are in central Alberta, and it is, like you say, dealing with the finale, the celebration, but of course, we're hearing the stories today. Tomorrow, we had Education Day with the kids, and it was just phenomenal to see all the children here and there, and it's amazing, Miss O'Sullivan.
Right on. What is the highlight for you, Donald? Tell us something that we can all hold on to here.
The highlight was coming here this morning, 6 a.m. to do the ceremony, right?
Uh-huh.
To offer tobacco and to just to start it right, right? to start it right and start the new day with the sacred fire, lighting up the sacred fire, listening to the songs and it's a great start, a new day. That's was very a moment for me that I should do every day.
Well, the thing about the sacred fire is they light it. People can go and sit around the sacred fire. They can pray. They can focus on, you know, maybe their presentation. They can ask for prayers. And you can also put stuff in the fire.
For instance,
was at a powwow in the downtown east side. I recognize that a lot of the people that live on the streets are really hugely affected by the impact of residential school. So I took this red a head thing that somebody had given me to wear during the powwow, and I burnt that in a sacred fire. Another thing that's happening is they have a treasure box when people go up and they give their presentation and tell and share their story, the truth of their experience at residential school and the impact on them. They can also put stuff in that treasure box. And in the end, you know, the Truth and Reconciliation has visited 7 regions. And at the end of this finale, they're going to take these items that have been put into that box. Like Ruby Dennis, while in Vancouver, went up on stage, gave her presentation, and she cut all of her hair off and she put it in that box as a symbol of her healing and her grieving over the losses, the loss of the culture, the loss of the family. So that's going to be wonderful, Donald.
Well, thank you very much for those amazing words. It's a great event here, and I'll keep you posted, and we'll be recording as much as we can for your listeners down in Salish territory.
Okay, and why don't we talk to you again at 5:30 at Co-op Radio.
5:30?
Yes.
Is that my time or your time?
It's my time, Donald.
So that's 6:30, okay.
Okay, all right. Thank you for calling in. That was Donald Bourne. He is an intergenerational survivor of residential schools. And during the 7th and final meeting of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, it's on its way in Edmonton. Thousands of Aboriginal people are there to recount over the next 4 days their painful and often disturbing experiences that they had while at residential school. One of the things that happens at the Truth and Reconciliation is at the very end, on the very last day, they pull out a whole bunch of, what do you call those, cupcakes.
Okay.
And they sing happy birthday in various languages across the country, Indigenous languages from Canada. And the reason they do that is because a lot of people who went to residential school don't celebrate their birth, you know. Mm. They don't celebrate Mother's Day or Father's Day because they didn't have their moms and dads. And so it was really significant that the Truth and Reconciliation acknowledges our birth and that we're happy about it, right? And
yeah.
And we get to learn how to sing it in their language. Did you want to translate?
Yeah. Bueno, estábamos conversando sobre las celebraciones que están en Edmonton ahora sobre, bueno, este fuego sagrado y varios eventos que se están realizando. Lo importante es que se recuperen este tipo de celebraciones tan tradicionales y que pertenecen a las raíces, en este caso, de los nativos norteamericanos.
Yes, that's right. Okay, and so you wanted to share some
music?
Music, yes.
Definitely.
Okay.
I bring something today from the right bottom of the continent, from Uruguay.
Okay.
This is a singer. His name is Jorge Drexler. And the song is the song's name is Sea.
Esta carretera, tantas encrucijadas quedan detrás. Ya está en el aire girando mi moneda. Y que sea lo que sea, todos los altibajos de la marea.
todos los sarampiones que ya pasé. Yo llevo tu sonrisa como bandera, y que sea lo que sea, lo que tenga que ser, que sea, y lo que no, por algo será. No creo en la eternidad de las peleas, ni en las recetas de la felicidad. Cuando pasen recibo mis primaveras y la suerte esté echada a descansar. Yo miraré tu foto en mi billetera, y que sea lo que sea, y el que quiera creer, que crea, y el que no, su razón tendrá. Yo suelto mi canción en la ventolera, y que la escuche quien la quiera escuchar. Ya está en el aire girando mi moneda, y que sea lo que sea, y que sea lo que sea, y que sea lo que sea, y que sea lo que sea.
Ya está en el aire girando,
y que sea.
Yeah, what was the name of that song again?
Sea, which Sea. Means to be.
To be.
It's like, it's, you know, it's he's whispering to have uh-huh. new things along the road.
Oh, yeah. Good things happening to him in life.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, definitely.
Excellent. And that's what we're working towards right now on Language to Language. You have something that you wanted to invite people
definitely.
To?
Yeah, definitely. For Saturday, I just want to remind the people that Saturday at 3 p.m., at Robson Square, uh-huh. downtown Vancouver.
Yes.
It's not a protest, mm-hmm. you know, it's just a support to the Venezuelan students.
Oh, good.
And just, and I would like to say that I joined this group of people not just because they are protesting against the government, mm-hmm. it's just because they are supporting the students. And they were already 31 people dead, and now it will be more, but mm-hmm. you know, it's not just students. It's a student, mm-hmm. it's police, it's yes. like everybody, uh-huh. it's the people.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not nothing against the government, mm-hmm. it's against the violence and also the human rights, you know, mm-hmm. because they must be free to protest, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's it.
Exactly. They must be free to have a voice of their own.
Yeah.
And you know who has a voice of her own? This lady is amazing. Like, if you like the blues, you're going to love Red Soul Blues. Rose Sikkema is a Cree lady. She's awesome. She's been playing music for years and dedicated her entire life to music. And it's what gets her through the day at the end. She has a song called Music Is My Man. And that's how much she loves music. You get where I'm going with this. She will be performing at 122 East Hastings in the bad part of town, along with Patricia Burns Your Wagon, who's a comedian, and also Rez Warriors. They're from the Sly Ammon Band, and also the Beezers, my all-time favorite, Franny and Bobby Beezer. they sing everything from the blues, Billie Holiday, a little bit of jazz. They got some country going on, some Celtic music. They're awesome. They even sing Janis Joplin.
Janis Joplin.
And I love them. They're going to be there. The reason we're doing this is because we want to celebrate this project that I've been doing over the last year is coming to its completion. And it's called Resonating Reconciliation. Hmm. We have had up to like 70 radio documentaries completed this year from station to station. 40 stations have been engaged in this project, including CITR, CGSF, Co-op Radio, CIVL, CFUV, CKUT, CHUO, you name it. All of them have been a part of this project. And in that, they've been able to engage a First Nations people from their community to produce a radio documentary called Resonating Reconciliation. In that documentaries, you hear from people all across Canada, people who are intergenerational survivors or survivors who have been greatly affected by the impact of residential school, and they share their truths with you in these documentaries. And if you want to hear more about that, you can go to NCRA Resonating, and you will find these documentaries. As I said, up to 70 documentaries. We were only commissioned to do 40, but people at different stations did... Some people did four half-hour documentaries. Some did 10 radio documentaries. So wow. We've exceeded our own goals in sharing the legacy of residential schools across Canada. Every station who engages in the project will then not only just air their own radio documentary, but they will air all of the rest of the documentaries at their station, thereby giving these people so much listenership, you know, like they're going to reach so many people with these documentaries. It's been an amazing project, and it's going to take me a long time to come down from that one, Resonating Reconciliation. But we start on the 28th, on the 29th, this Saturday, celebrating the completion of the Resonating Reconciliation documentaries with Red Soul Blues, as I said, Patricia Brunzier-Wagon, who's a wicked, wicked lady who tells these wicked, wicked jokes that you're just going to laugh your pants off. And then Franny Beezer, and as I said, Res Warriors. I would like to share with you a song that I haven't yet heard from Red Soul Blues, and I'm going to play it today. It's called I'm Not Your Pocahontas on CITR. We'll see you next week.
See you next week. Yeah, for hola. Sure. Hola, hola. Okay, hola a todos allá en Latinoamérica y aquí en Vancouver, quienes nos escuchan también en español. Queríamos decirles hasta luego y que nos vemos la próxima semana. Recuerden, jueves de 2 a 3 de la tarde. Si me está escuchando, un saludo especial para Eugenia Zambrano, mejor conocida como La Tuca, mi querida amiga. Un beso. Chao.
Yes, chao. It's been a great breaking down the walls of communication with you, Peter. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Nobody here wants, not even you. Center of it all, the sea alone, the sea alone. Darkness, I hold.